The Athletic.
1-2, 1-2, 1-2. Gives a 1-2.
1-2, 1-2, 1-2.
Okay, you ready? This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. We are recording inside an empty Old Trafford after United's 2-2 draw with Liverpool. Just the latest crazy game in this crazy series of matches they seem to be having at the moment. Karl Anka's already chuckling along next to me. Andy Mitten is coming to us from home as well. What do you think of that, Karl?
Full-time whistle was a mixture of relief and a little seasickness there. Bit gutted about the penalty, but that was funny. That was really funny.
Every game just seems to be chaos at the moment. Certainly at times. We'll get into all the different aspects of the game, I'm sure, and the result and the performance and everything else. Andy, what do you think?
Two fantastic goals from Manchester United.
Yeah.
I also think that Liverpool have played United three times this season and not managed to beat United once.
87 shots they've had against United this season and not won a single game.
Yeah. We know that Liverpool are a far better team because you just need to look at the league table to see that. And the fact that they've still not beaten United and United have knocked them out in the FA Cup. I'm satisfied with that. But we all know that this isn't a brilliant Manchester United team. So we almost feel like cheeky underdogs who punched above our weight to get a result because that first half was so one-sided, and statistically as well, but as well as what we could see in our own eyes. But then United were much better in the second half, and I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah, they were. Someone wrote an article about playground football this week, Karl, on The Athletic. You don't know who that was, do you?
I think it was me. So it wasn't the plan for me to write something on Friday about that. I was actually going to write something about TV viewership between United and Liverpool, and then the big honcho went, United play silly football. And I went, well, everyone in the league plays silly football. And he said, explain it. So I had a go. So this season, 23-24, has had 6-4-3 results. There have only been 10 nil-nils. If things go on at their current rate, this season will end up with the most penalties awarded in any Premier League season. We've had more goals per game this Premier League season, and we've had more comeback points per game this Premier League season. And part of it is because you've got teams like Manchester United who are incredible at counter-attacks but mediocre at defending against counter-attacks. And we've seen that again today. I don't know what's going on with Liverpool's finishing. There were two or three times where it felt like they were playing with their food. Diaz
kind same of, as the FA Cup, right?
Same as the FA Cup. Diaz missing some shots that you would expect to go in. Szoboszlai had five shots within the first 35 minutes and was toying with Casemiro, and you're going, this could be three or four by half time, but he just didn't do it. Darwin Nunez has five shots a game and is runs around the place like a speedboat with a broken rudder. So that's just part of the experience. But there are loads of times, and you are wondering when Liverpool are going to sort their lives out and score, and then United go off and bang, 40-yard lob from Bruno. And that's it. That's why we like football, because sometimes really silly things can happen twice.
But it feels like silly things are happening every single game. It feels like this week we've had three matches where silly things have happened almost constantly all the way through. If you can hear random beeps and
And boops.
Yeah.
That's some things being uploaded by other media members and a very nice conversation between some journalists to our left. Andy, when Liverpool are flooding forward on a counter-attack and there's four or five people running through midfield, what's going through your head?
I'm alarmed because it's happening game after game. It's not just happening with Liverpool. We saw Brentford do it as well. So I think you used the word there, toyed. In the second half of the Cup game a few weeks ago, that was when Liverpool were toying with Manchester United. And at times today in the first half, well, for almost all the first half, apart from the first 10 minutes, because I thought United started quite brightly.
They were excellent. Yeah. It was 10-15 again. Yeah.
And I think Casemiro put a header across, which if Hoyland had managed to get to it, but that was after about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's alarming. This idea, which Erik ten Hag says that I'm not concerned about the number of shots which I put onto towards our goal, I'm baffled by it because whichever way you look at it, the more shots that teams have, the more chance they have of scoring.
It's like challenging every single narrative you've like ever learnt about football. Because I interviewed Bruno Fernandes after the game as well, and I said to him, you know, another 28 shots conceded for the team, but nobody seems that concerned about it. Is it a problem? Is it something that you're purposely setting out to do? I mean, why is no one seems to be concerned about it? I've watched a few bouts in my time.
So
yeah.
You've seen a heavyweight boxer with just a granite chin?
Yeah.
And
would you describe Manchester United as a heavyweight boxer with a granite chin?
They don't have a granite chin, but for some reason they don't get knocked out as much as they should do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think Ten Hag's estimation now is, let's not worry too much about, you know, our granite-ish chin will eat some punches, but also when the opposition overreaches, that opens up extra space in behind. I still don't know if this is the best way for Manchester United to play with this group of players, but when you use your eyes, they're all playing for each other.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
The motivation is there, the personal pride is there. I watched Dalot in the first half and he looked knackered.
Yeah.
Because of just how much running he's doing up and down and up and down and up and down. And yet, you know, when there's a break in play, you can see the coaching team is sort of looking at him like, you all right? You're blowing? He's like, no, I'm fine. And Bruno Fernandes had the same thing in the second half when he got shifted out to left-hand side. He sort of, you know, shrugged his shoulders a bit, looked a bit knackered. Ten Hag went, you look all right? And he just went, it's fine. They're gritting and bearing it. Should they have to grit and bear it? Maybe not.
No, but they're having to do that to get through games. I mean, Bruno Fernandes, like I say, I spoke to him after the match. His ankle was heavily, heavily strapped and iced, but I think that's pretty normal. You know, he is the type of robust footballer that Erik ten Hag said that Manchester United need more of when he spoke in his press conference last week. And I think it's an interesting point because I know previous managers have felt the same about this Manchester United squad, that they need more of those types in there. Diogo Dalot has certainly become one of those this season. I think Harry Maguire is that the majority of the time, even though he's had his problems. In fact, his children are actually running around the empty Old Trafford pitch at the moment. His daughter, I think it is shouting, Dad, 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 because he's not listening and he's talking over the other side. But they've all got number 5 shirts on as well. He was brilliant today, Harry Maguire, by the way, wasn't he?
Fantastic. And he had to be fantastic. And this is what I feel about a lot of these players now, where your ability and your physical duels is so important, because there is no safety net. Maguire has to win 80 to 95% of his headers, because if he doesn't, the flick on happens, someone sneaks in behind and Liverpool get a shot on goal. Andre Onana now needs to be the shot stopper he was at Inter Milan, the shot stopper he was at times at Ajax, and he's getting closer.
Oh, and more, by the way, because he won't have faced this many shots.
This is probably why we've seen the best version of Dalot we've ever seen at United, because if he's not, it's hell to play.
Yeah. It's like they're playing on tilt, isn't it?
They are playing on tilt. They are playing a super aggressive game. And I think this works against Liverpool in a highly emotional circumstance, because sometimes you can bait an opponent that should know better into doing something silly. And Jurgen Klopp said something along those lines in the press conference of, you know, it's hard. He said it's harder for Liverpool to come to Old Trafford and play compared to other teams in the Premier League, because other teams, okay, we can do whatever. Whereas Liverpool, there's just an extra layer of emotional narrative. And I think, you know, I asked Ten Hag about the transitions again. I said, is the intention when everyone comes fit to just keep playing this transitional style or to move into something different? And he paused and he looked at me and he smiled. And it's the sort of smile your dad or your uncle or your boss does where they want to go, come on, you already know the answer. Why are you giving me this question? And he said, yeah, against teams like Chelsea and against teams like Liverpool, they leave space in behind. So why not do this style of football? It makes your heart rate go up.
Yeah, exciting.
It's exciting. It makes your heart rate go up. There is method in the madness. I'm still not sure it's the best method, but it is a method that you've got some points.
Yeah, I just don't even know if I'm happy, Andy. That's the other thing. Like, when Bruno Fernandes spoke after the game, he was quite downbeat on United only getting a draw because obviously they conceded that late penalty. But if you'd asked me at half time, would you take 2-2? I'd have ripped your arm off.
Yeah, of course. But you're leading 2-1 and you're at home to Liverpool, and then you concede once again because United struggled to keep hold of Leeds. So I get that bit of deflation, and I saw Kobbie Mainoo after the game. He was saying something pretty similar. He was a bit gutted because they'd already shown that they could beat Liverpool in the cup game last month. I think it's exciting. I mean, it's not good for your nerves.
No.
But there was a point at the halfway point this season where we were asking to pick out moments from this season, and there hadn't been enough of them. And now we're watching exciting games most weeks. So that Chelsea match the other night, two teams going at each other toe-to-toe. And I'm saying this too often. If you're a neutral, and we're not, but these are fantastic games of football. And I watched a bit of City last week, and it was 0-0. This is the opposite of that, because Manchester United and Chelsea the other night, neither team could control the game. Liverpool had control in the first half, but there were still massive parts of the second half where neither team had control of the match. It's exciting. We're seeing great goals. I'm glad you mentioned Dalot. There was a point where Aaron Wan-Bissaka did this wild clearance that went right across his own box, and Dalot brought it down, and rather than pass it...
That touch, yeah. Oh, it's quality.
He just surged forward, and he's probably been Manchester United's best player this season. When I'm watching him, I'm not thinking this is how we should be in April about to win loads of trophies. I'm sort of thinking, what's this going to look like in a year's time if the manager stays? How good is Højlund going to be? How good is Garnacho going to be? Is Kobbie going to continue like this? Are any more youngsters coming through? Because Kambwala, I thought he did decent today. But
yeah,
but it surely Manchester United next season cannot have the same number of injuries. And United still, I think, have to finish this season strongly for Erik ten Hag to keep his job. It's wild. And we go back to that point of, it's all right to concede loads of chances. It's not all right when I look at the goal difference table and Manchester United are on negative a month off the end of the season. He knows, and it's really interesting that he paused to Carl's question because he knows exactly what he wants. This is someone who's not given up. Jose Mourinho had given up. Jose Mourinho said he deserved to be sacked. I think that Erik ten Hag is so committed to this idea, like Louis van Gaal was. But Louis van Gaal's football was so boring that United fans had had enough. You cannot
it's
accuse.
It's the opposite of this. Isn't
yeah,
it?
We're seeing goals. We're no. seeing excitement.
Yeah.
There's butts all over the place, but I am enjoying it.
None of them are Nicky.
None of them are Nicky.
I think you're right. I think he feels like there is something here, or he feels like there is something for him to cling on to in terms of the progression of the team in recent weeks and months. I mean, when he spoke after the game today, I was listening to a couple of the interviews, he was so bullish about it. So Ivory's trying to convince everyone with his messaging in the media that United are onto something, or he has got a firm belief that there is something there in the way that the team's playing at the moment. I just can't decide whether he's right or not.
To answer your question with another question, what did you make of Mason Mount's cameo?
I don't even know if I've got an opinion.
It's like
I liked his booking.
Right, here you go.
Well, took that one for the team, didn't he?
you saw that. So Casemiro gets done. They're all steaming back. Mason Mount, tactical foul, very much. Take him off the team, gets a yellow card. That's the sort of thing Man City and Arsenal are very, very good at without getting the booking. That's the sort of thing United probably could have done with a lot more this season. You know, obviously it's a lot better if Casemiro doesn't get skinned in the first place.
But they were just running through midfield again today,
I looked at that Mount cameo and I'm going, I'm beginning to understand why he held an appeal for United and Ten Hag before the summer, in that if you can improve the physical floor of this team, if you can get bigger, quicker, more Bruno type, they've got four lungs players, then this style of football can be very effective, particularly against the top six, because those teams will leave in space and behind. The worry and the concern is, what do you do against a team like Brentford that played with three centre-backs and wing-backs that came inside? Andy, if I went, United are going to play this style of football next season, but with a bunch of new signings, or United are going to play a different style of football next season with largely the same squad, which one would you prefer?
I'm going for the new signings.
Yep.
maybe wouldn't just give Erik ten Hag and Ty carte blanche on these signings.
Yeah.
Because I think last season was a bit of a worry. I'm going for, and this is an optimistic view, injuries can't possibly be as bad as this season.
No.
I know, like Liverpool a couple of seasons ago. Move out a couple of players because he's had some absolute disasters this season. You know, Anthony Martial suddenly leaves him massively exposed and over-reliant on Rasmus Højlund, who's a kid. Bring a striker in, maybe bring another midfielder in, depending on what happens with Casemiro, Eriksen, etc. And suddenly I'm thinking, all right, Anana looks like he's settled in now. You should, in theory, have at least one left-back for next season. I liked a lot of the football of Ten Hag last season. I thought that when he hit January, February, when we beat City, when we won the League Cup, I was enjoying it. Old Trafford was a fortress again. Now, this is me with a very idealised view, thinking, you know, new season optimism and all that. I think we should, if he does keep his job, next season is when you judge him really harshly. Because if we're seeing the same repeat behaviour, then we're just going to have to say, this is just not working. But again, he knows that. I think he knows that, you know, right from the off, Wolves were blitzing through Manchester United's midfield.
Yeah.
And he has to do something about it. I don't know what the answer is. But equally, I don't look at any other manager in the world and go, yep, if we bring him in, everything's going to be sorted out.
It's interesting that Ten Hag often brings up the Arsenal game, 3-1 at Emirates, and says, you know, if Garnacho's goal had been onside, boom, boom, boom. Because you can read that as Ten Hag saying the style of football they were going for would have kicked up a notch if they had beaten Arsenal, gone into that international break, and, you know, perhaps wave a magic wand and some of those injuries don't happen. And if some of those injuries don't happen and you're playing a good style of football to this pace, then at this point now, they're not uncertain of the things they're supposed to be doing. Ten Hag, just in his full-time press conference now, said one of the big things they talked about at halftime was their passing in the half spaces and their aggression. And he also talked about the decision-making they've got to make in the defensive transition. And I said, you know, when you say that, is it just about retreating really quickly into a compact shape? Is that because you want to stay up and counter-press? And he said his rest defence needs to be better, which is, you know, what is the rest of the team doing when a player like Bruno Fernandes has the ball? So if Bruno Fernandes loses it, are they in the correct positions to win the ball back quickly? And all throughout this season, the answer to that is no. Ahmed's written about why that's a problem. I've written pieces about why that's a problem. Laurie's done it. Critch's done it. That's been a bit of a mess. However, and this feels like a weird question, because if the defensive midfielder who was supposed to succeed Casemiro wasn't Amrabat,
yeah,
if it was a player who was better suited to Premier League football, could you see some more method into that madness in the second half?
Maybe.
And
maybe.
That's the maybe. I think Ten Hag's job between now and the end of the season is to turn that maybe upward inflection question mark into a full stop.
I think it's the spirit that he's clinging on to.
Okay.
I genuinely think that. I think that the application, like you said before, there's no question about them fighting for each other. There's no question about them running for each other. There's no question about any of that. And when you've had the games that they've had lately, I mean, remember when we were talking about Manchester United just not scoring and Manchester United just not looking at winning games earlier on in the season? They're completely different now, and in Mainoo and in Garnacho and in Højlund and Dalot, and, you know, even people like Maguire today, you know, there's a quality there. I'm not sure it's exactly the optimum tactical setup that Erik ten Hag wants this Manchester United team to play in, but I think he sees and feels something in the spirit of the group that makes him think that he can be a bit more bullish about him staying here and also what exactly is happening at the club at the moment. But I still come back to it, and I can't help but feel that you've got to be one thing or the other. And even in games, it feels like he's changing his mind. I mean, today, Manchester United brought a quality in the second half to push Liverpool back that was just chaos and momentum and pressure, and it just being all too much for Liverpool, just overwhelming them. And then when he got to a point, he takes Garnacho off and brings Amrabat on, which then suggests that you're going for a completely different approach. And surely the best way to keep pinning Liverpool back, surely the best way to keep hold of the result was to keep pinning Liverpool back and using Garnacho and Højlund and the runners for the outballs.
Right.
And they just lost that. So then if you sit back and try and bed in and maintain control. Well, you're conceding loads of shots and you're conceding loads of ground, so you're just inviting Liverpool on, aren't you?
Ten Hag was asked about the thinking behind taking off Garnacho for Amrabat, and he said, well, it wasn't the game. He said it wasn't the game for Garnacho, and he wasn't fresh, and he was tiring, which is...
Well, I'm not surprised. He'd sprinted about 400 times, but he was still sprinting.
And you know, doing that decision just after you took Garnacho off against Chelsea as well stings a bit, you know, yeah. Hard.
He wasn't happy either. He was sat next to me on the step. That's become the annoyed at being taken off step. Anyone who's annoyed at being taken off sits on the step and doesn't sit on the bench.
Well, they were all annoyed when they came off at Chelsea the other night, none more so than Garnacho. And I can actually understand him the other night. But as you said, it's the manager's managing minutes, and he's 29 consecutive matches. And Anthony played really well, but he was dropped today. So I think the manager had the two teams in his mind as of midweek, and he's played them. I find it really interesting that you mentioned this Arsenal game in September, and maybe we'll see in a couple of weeks when he plays Arsenal at Old Trafford, because you're totally right. Eric Ten Hag is obsessed with this match, which United lost. And I was in the away end that day, and I've never seen Manchester United play like it before. It was like they were just passing the ball across in front of the goalkeeper. And then I spoke to Eric Ten Hag about it, and he said, I had a feeling after Arsenal in September, we were improving. We played very good, but we lost the game. We had bad luck. At Arsenal, for me, it was a penalty on Højlund in the 86th minute. Fine. Before that, Garner made it 2-1 and we were disallowed. Our game plan was working perfectly. We were composed on the ball through the whole game. We defended quite deep, no shit, and were very, very good in transitions. To convince the team to suffer and sacrifice like that at Arsenal because you want the rewards will follow, but only for the reward to be taken from you. That was a big frustration. So he is obsessed by that Arsenal game.
It was in September.
And
It
was in September, yeah. And it was far better than Arsenal in 2022 when Cristiano Ronaldo played well. It was a mad game. Johnny Evans came on when we never thought we'd be seeing Johnny Evans this season, and we've ended up seeing loads of him. But you know, Eric Ten Hag knows a lot more about tactics than we do, and this is his template.
That's what makes me confused about how I feel and what I think, and even in that substitution, really, because you're right, I'm sure he does know more about football than me, but
you can see it across the horizon, but you don't know how far away it is.
And I don't know if they're actually getting there or not.
Yeah.
They'll ever get there.
You can
like
see
this.
Something around the horizon. You're not sure how far away it is, and you're not sure if you want to go closer to it.
Yeah, but he definitely must feel that horizon is coming. Otherwise, he can't possibly be as bullish as he was after the game today. I mean, he was telling some of the reporters that they were interrupting him when he was making his point, and he was having to make a point again and apologising for making the same point, which was obviously, you know, a backhanded way of saying you're asking me rubbish questions. So this is far more bullish than he's ever been.
I can't explain it. This is a very confident football manager at a time where he's been 3-2 up and lost 4-3 against what is a mid-table Chelsea team. And he's lost the 1-0 lead against Brentford. And he's lost the 2-1 lead against Liverpool. But he sees something that we aren't seeing. You know, maybe Ten Hag
Well, I think we maybe are seeing it.
Maybe Ten Hag is going to go away on Monday and say, actually, we've lost back-to-back... We've dropped points, I should say, in back-to-back games through our fullbacks being knackered and giving away penalties. It happens. Move on to the next thing.
Well, even today, you know, they've conceded again, you know, I don't know, was it 28 shots today, I think the stat was. But they've conceded from a set piece, which was a bit of a mess, and a penalty.
You're getting conditioned.
I know.
Do you know what worries me, lads? It's not looking up like we have done for the last few months. It's looking down on the table because the teams below...
Well, I'm not even looking at the table at the moment. It feels like Manchester United are just in nowhere land where that's concerned almost now.
So then you say, is any European football better than no European football? Because financially, you know, getting into the UEFA Tiddlywinks League where you're playing like FC Clog and Cheese, you're getting like 30 quid for playing those matches. But I actually think, and I might be in a minority here, that it's better to be playing European football for many reasons, not least squad.
Managers say that all the time, don't they? That it helps for the squad because you're keeping everyone involved.
Yeah. And I believe them. Look at the Europa League when players like Brandon Williams were brought in, when I don't think they would have been brought into to Champions League football. But look at that league table and look in the rear mirror, and there's West Ham and Newcastle and Chelsea. And suddenly I'm thinking, Manchester United need 3 points, because from the last week, the draw against Brentford and the draw against Liverpool, you would think that coming up this month, you've got Burnley at Old Trafford, you've got Sheffield United at Old Trafford.
Tight. Hang on.
If Chelsea win their game in hand, they're above us on goal difference, because as I'm speaking now, they're winning 2-1 at Sheffield United.
Exactly.
Imagine United finished below Chelsea, by the way.
Exactly. So, you know, if Manchester United don't start picking points up, then it's a 9th or 10th place finish, which you can be as bullish as you want. I'm sorry. That's just not acceptable. No. So I would expect Manchester United to start getting the 3 points, because if you look at the running with those winnable home matches, and then this Arsenal game is going to be fascinating, isn't it? Because this is like his fantasy match. So Erik ten Hag is going to put on this showcase where United just pass the ball in front of the defence and win 2-0 on transitions. I'm all ready for it. I'm waiting for it. Do that in the final of the FA Cup as well.
Well, Lisandro Martinez needs to get back for that.
Yeah. I mean,
that's an interesting question. We've just talked about Willie Caballero having a good game. I think Harry Maguire had a fantastic game and probably should have been man of the match. There is a situation, you know, if everyone stays and contracts get extended or renewed, where you'll have Martinez, Maguire, Varane, Lindelof, who signed a contract extension, Kambwala, Evans, we don't know if he's been offered a contract yet or if he's going to hang his boots up. I've heard information to both left and right. That's a lot of centre-backs.
Well, they need them.
That's a lot of centre-backs. How do they all fit at a point in time where one day they should all be fit?
Well, they're going to have to try and move people on, aren't they? That's the situation. I mean, in terms of, you were talking before, Andy, weren't you, about all the different areas of the pitch that it feels like need attention. Well, players are going to have to leave for that to happen, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think they will leave, and that's why John Murta and Matt Hargreaves are travelling around Europe at the moment. But are they even going to be in jobs themselves? So there's so much at the club which is in a state of flux, and I'm seeing reports come in, real left field, right field. I'm seeing loads of agents, you know, contacting journalists like ourselves and saying, you know, Manchester United are absolutely interested in my client. And then I put it to the club and it's like, well, they're bound to say that because they want a big money move to Manchester United. I think I'm told that the transfer window is going to be pretty unusual because a lot of clubs don't have money. Financial fair play is a massive issue for so many clubs. And then you've got clubs outside the Premier League thinking, if we can just sell one player to the Premier League, then we've absolutely smashed it and it's bonanza. It's not that simple. So we've got this idealised version, right, we'll get that striker there, that midfielder, just move them players on and bang, we're ready for the title push next season. It's nothing like that. You know, some of them players at United are on massive, massive contracts which weigh so heavily that it's a problem.
Well, somehow we've managed to get through nearly half an hour without talking properly about two of the best goals I've seen at Old Trafford this season or in recent times. I mean, the first from Bruno Fernandes.
Given away by Quansah. Oh. Hit by Fernandes! Oh,
my goodness.
What about it? The Red Devils from out of the blue. Quansah hangs his head. Bruno Fernandes pops out his chest. And Old Trafford comes to life.
It just came out of nothing, Carl, didn't it? We had 0.00 XG in the first half, and I feel like the two decimal places really adds to the narrative rather than just saying it's 0 XG, it's 0.00. And that chance, I think, was 0.01. Yep. He took it so well.
He took it so well. Ten Hag said it came from nothing. So it's a slack square pass from Quansah. And Bruno with a 40-yard chip lob. We compare it to Cavani's one if you want. It's tremendous.
I think it was better than Cavani's one. He had to react so quickly to that, and it's not even in the perfect place for him to hit it in the manner that he did, but because he did it so quickly and so decisively, it just completely took Kelleher out of the equation. And because his technique was so pure on that strike, it was just an absolutely fantastic goal.
It's a really interesting one because it clearly put a spring in his step at a time when he was not having the best game.
No,
that was
true.
A really poor first half from Bruno. He lost the ball a lot. And United can be a confidence team. When they score, they have a little 5 minute period where all their tails are up and they all suddenly remember passing patterns and off ball movement.
The stadium like buys into that as well. The stadium gets its confidence again.
But that also meant a lot of United players started flooding forward. So Liverpool had a really good counter attack. I'm not going to say what I said when the ball came over to Darwin Nunez, but I thought that was a goal. The fact that Liverpool didn't score.
That one when he crossed it. It was weird.
The fact that they didn't score
that
again.
That was from a United corner as well, wasn't it?
There you go. Yeah. Classic. But the fact they didn't score also increased United's confidence yet again.
Yeah.
I've never seen a team gain confidence from escaping from a near miss in the way this United team escapes from a near miss. Tremendous. And Bruno Fernandes really grew into the game after that.
Yeah. Yeah, and you say that Bruno wasn't having a brilliant game. I'm not sure that Kobbie Mainoo was either. And then he went and did this.
And now Wan-Bissaka. And Mainoo! Oh, beauty! Glorious chaos!
This game is absolutely mad. It's United from nowhere. But it's a thing of absolute beauty from Kobbie Mainoo.
What a goal.
Oh, what a goal. I mean, Bruno's was just from distance and he hit the target, which isn't easy. Stretford end, Cobbie Stretford end as well. Left to tee up with his right. What I loved about that Cobbie goal was before it had gone into the net, he'd already turned away to celebrate. And I thought, that's a kid who knows his onions here. I'm liking that. And after the match, he spoke well. He speaks well. He's an articulate young man and I've been really encouraged by him.
The thing that really got me about that Mainoo goal was as he stops it dead, Garnacho is coming towards him and he gives him a little hand motion, like, away, I've got this. And then he spins and he shoots. He's not facing the goal. To have the awareness of mind to be like, to tell a teammate.
Like Makeda.
Yeah. This isn't yours. I'm going to spin and shoot. And yeah, thanks, Cobbie.
Yeah, the bend and the arch of the finish reminded me so much of Federico Makeda. And our seat here, we're right, and you probably were the same from the press box, Carl, right in line with the far post and him curling it around Kelleher into that far corner. It was an absolutely fantastic goal. Because, like I say, it was interesting. I was listening to Bruno after the game, speaking to Viaplay Norway, Jan-Åge Fjørtoft, who I know occasionally will listen into this podcast. So, Jan, if you're listening, good evening, my friend. He was talking to him about Mainoo and about, obviously, he's had a fantastic impact on the team this season, but he was talking to him about what comes next. Because when you're first in the side and you're first at this level, you're a surprise to people. There is elements that are easier for you because no one knows anything about you. And he said, Bruno said, it might not come this season, but it may come next season that it gets a little bit tougher for Cobbie because people know your game. Mm-hmm. They know how to stop you and they've got plans for you and there's different ways in which they can go about trying to nullify your effect on the game. But Bruno was saying he's humble, he's hardworking, he's smart, he's talented, and he feels like he'll be able to work it out. And I wonder, even in this game, there were times where it felt like he was being nullified a little bit, but he still found a way to work it out with that goal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think a lot of it is now, as Andy's spoken about, will come down to Casemiro, or it will come down to the player next to Mainoo. Casemiro lost the ball 16 times.
Did he?
Did he?
He lost possession 16 occasions today.
Wow.
Szoboszlai was feasting in the space behind him.
Yeah, in the first half he was, wasn't he?
I put in the discussion page on The Athletic, Casemiro is looking a bit more like his older self. I said, not as good as last season and not as good as his Real Madrid days, but better than previous. And then it just sort of fell apart a little bit in that first half. This is really concerning because he's, I mean, as we saw in that very agricultural tackle near the end.
Some way of putting it.
He's still got enough in there that he's of use to Manchester United this season. I'm not inclined to go with a Mainoo and Mount central midfield just yet because, again, we've spoken before, Casemiro in the air is just so valuable. But it is creaky in a way that makes me a little bit uncomfortable.
Right, before we get to the final points in this podcast, I think we need to talk about the tragedy chanting as well. We didn't talk about it after the FA Cup game and quite a few of the listeners got in touch with us to say why not. And I think it's a fair point, to be honest. Andy, I know you've written about it in the past. There's pieces on The Athletic by Colin Miller, by Simon Hughes and others about the chanting that's taken place between Manchester United and Liverpool. Historically, to be fair, it's not a new issue. It's obviously something that's been around for a while. What do you think, Andy?
Well, I've done a lot for Simon Hughes's piece for The Athletic. I don't think that sounds a very obvious thing to say here, that football fans should be singing about the Munich Air disaster, the Hillsborough disaster, the Bradford disaster, Ibrox. And I grew up in an era when I would hear Munich being sung all the time from Liverpool fans and others. I'd look at the scoreboard and I'd see inflatable aeroplanes being thrown around there. I think we're talking about this now because in recent games between Manchester United and Liverpool, it's been more United fans, and not isolated United fans, but at times thousands of United fans, especially in the cup game 3 weeks ago, singing songs such as "The Sun Was Right, You're Murderers." Now, there's so much whataboutery going on that it's pretty pathetic. I think if you're going to try and score points from disasters, you're not really for me. I think that we should be better than this. I think most Manchester United and Liverpool fans would not sing about Munich and would not sing about Hillsborough. There are actually some who enjoy it. They like it. They hide away in the dark corners of the internet and they try and justify it with, they did it first, they did it first. Yeah, but what about when they sing, Fergie's right, your fans are shy, and you get that pathetic Pavlovian response? Before the game at Old Trafford last season, I spoke to Stephen. Stephen lost his brother at Hillsborough. And I say I spoke to him, but I just listened to him for 2 hours. He told me how much his brother and he idolised George Best. And whenever George Best came to Liverpool, whether to play Liverpool or Everton, they'd go and watch him. And he just said, please stop singing about it. It's destroying me. You know, and that's his brother. Who is impacted by the chants? Well, ask the people who lost the loved ones. Ask the friends and the family of Munich or of Bradford or of all the disasters that I've mentioned. I think education could see a reduction in it. But as I said, some people clearly enjoy it. But there's another thing. You're going to get yourself a Section 5. You're going to be banned from watching your football team. Your name's going to be all over the internet. Someone's going to go to your boss. You're going to lose your job. Is it worth it? Really? You know, that cup game a few weeks ago, there was a lot of people singing it. And I know that there are United fans who are annoyed because for decades, Liverpool sang about Munich. And I remember September 1990 when United fans were in the away end singing Where's Your Famous Munich Song? And well, where is it? Well, it vanished because Liverpool had a disaster of their own. Should we really be scoring points off the back of that? Hillsborough was an attack on all football fans, on the working classes by the government at that time. I was going to games at that time. The facilities were absolutely shit. They were dangerous. It's the reason I started United We Stand in 89. The British government thought that football fans were scum, were hooligans. They're about to introduce an ID card. And I'm thinking, I'm not scum. I'm not a hooligan. And decisions were made on behalf of football fans by people who've never been to a football game in their life. They looked down on football fans in all them great northern British cities of Liverpool and Leeds and Newcastle. And Hillsborough was a result of all that. It was a police cover-up. You know, it was disgraceful what has gone on there. And innocent people, including children, lost their lives there. Really going to try and make currency out of that? I just don't think you should.
No, I think we should leave it there, actually, to be honest, Carl. I think what Andy said, I don't think either of us could have put it any better than that, to be honest. There are several articles, like I say, on The Athletic about the current situation with the chanting. Jurgen Klopp and Erik ten Hag both spoke out against it before this game as well. So if you want to read more about it, you know exactly what to do. Just a final point as we wrap up. Carl, how pleasing is it that Jurgen Klopp has exited Old Trafford for the final time as Liverpool manager to the sound of Jurgen's cracking up being sang to him by the Red Army section?
I smiled bigly. Also, he gave a little shrug just before he went into the tunnel. So it got to him. It got to him.
He acknowledged it, yeah.
Oh, this football club. They make my hairs go grey, but every now and again, they do something brilliant.
Yeah, do you want him to stay now, Andy? You've been writing all week about how Manchester United have got Jurgen Klopp's number.
Well, his record's not that great against Manchester United. That was his 21st game, and he's only won 6 of them. So I know he's been a fantastic manager for Liverpool, and I know he's done for them what we'd love any manager to do for Manchester United in the post-Ferguson era.
Yeah.
But his record, and I spoke to all those people before the game, and they said Manchester United have got a chance. And it is a serious, you know, this is Solskjaer, this is Rui Faria. Rui Faria was Mourinho's assistant for four games at Man United. Didn't lose once against Liverpool. So he knows his stuff. You know, if this guy's going to talk to me, I'm going to listen to what he says. And Danny Higginbottom, who I think is an excellent tactician and the way he talks about it, they basically predicted what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And what happened was a surprise result. So great.
You can go and read that article still. You know, there's no reason why not. It's still a very interesting read. We've not even had a chance to talk about Andre Onana putting Vaseline on his goalie gloves. There's a piece on The Athletic about that, obviously. And also a bit about the under-18s beating Liverpool 9-1 this weekend as well, which has caught a lot of people's attention, including...
So you're saying United won on aggregate this weekend?
11-3 on aggregate, Carl. Yes, indeed. I've got a calculator. But we need to wrap it up before we get chucked out of Old Trafford. I hope you've enjoyed listening to us. Thank you for being with us, as always. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Andy. And we'll speak to you again before Bournemouth on Thursday. Take care. Enjoy. Bye-bye.
Athletic.